Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rohrkraut.
And today we're bringing you our first recap of the New York Film Festival. So we'll be talking about some titles that have already come out and have screened at the 63rd edition of the New York Film Festival. The fest just started last Friday, kicking off with After the Hunt as the opening night selection. And we've seen quite a few films so far. We'll just cover a few today. We'll talk about what we thought of them, and we'll just give some recommendations based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, this is an exciting time, a festival that we always look forward to and get to cover where we live. So it's really exciting. Plus, just all the events happening. There are some really cool talks between directors going on and different events that they add on during the festival. So apart from screenings, it's just a busy time. There's a lot of commuting back and forth to Lincoln Center, which I'm always excited for. And then by the end of week one into week two, I'm like, I have to go up there again. And I'm like, how am I going to change and get from work? And no, it's a really fun time. I'm excited to talk about some of these movies today. And yeah, we have seen a lot. And I think it's starting to, once again, show us what this award season is going to be like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely agree with you on your point on the talks, too. I love when directors get paired up for some of the talks throughout the festival. I know that Claire Denis is speaking with Barry Jenkins on Friday. So the day that this episode releases, Jafar Panahi will be speaking with Martin Scorsese. And I think this is just one of the coolest things that the New York Film Festival programmers could put together. I think, you know, we talked about that in our TIFF episode with Bennett of just how amazing it's been to see him out on the festival circuit. But here, having this talk in Alice Tully Hall with Martin Scorsese, I think is going to be a can't miss section of the festival.
Yeah, I agree. I hope I can get a ticket to that. But talking about the festival and week one, how's it been going for you so far? How many movies have you seen, or what has your experience been like?
It's been great so far. I have to confess that I have seen one battle after another quite a few times, and that has definitely affected the number of festival movies that I've been able to see on top of just working and yeah.
More than the number of movies you've seen at the festival?
Ooh, that's tough. No, I have seen more festival releases than times I've spent in the theater watching one battle after another, but I will say that it's close. But it's been, like you said, it's always fun, I think, spending time up at Lincoln Center, going around the Upper West Side just to different restaurants and really just spending time in that part of the city. I mean, the highlight of the festival so far for me is definitely meeting Daniel Day-Lewis.
I mean, that's quite a highlight. We can start there with Anemone if you want and that experience.
So, yeah, for listeners, if you're checking out this podcast for the first time, I am a huge fan of Daniel Day-Lewis. He is my all-time favorite actor. My cat is named after him. I love his films. And this year, he is actually returning to the silver screen. He's taken an 8-year break between Phantom Thread and this film, Anemone, which is directed by his son, Ronan Day-Lewis. The two of them also co-wrote the film together, and it is Ronan's directorial debut. This is a story about fathers and sons, about the bonds between brothers. I think that it really functions closely to like a folktale or a fable, and it's a really interesting and unique directorial debut. I think sometimes when we see first features, they might feel a little bit standard, or they're maybe tackling subjects that we've seen before or we've seen frequently, but I think this actually shows quite a bit of creative promise from Ronan Day-Lewis. And it goes without saying, but it's worth reiterating, Daniel Day-Lewis is absolutely fabulous in this movie.
I agree. I think this is a wonderful directorial debut by Ronan. I see entirely his vision, and you see that right off the bat, I think, with his artistic abilities. And they talked about him being a painter during the Q&A, so I really liked how that helped my viewing, which is a very slow burn. I was maybe a little worried for myself, but I came out of that movie crying, just understanding the story that Ronan and Daniel were telling, because they wrote the film together, about brothers, about father and son, and this journey, this really naturalistic, intimate journey that these characters go on. And I like that it's a very small film. There are only a few characters, but yeah, the cinematography by Ben Fordsman, out of this world. I wrote in my Letterboxd review that every movie should look like this, and I will stand by that statement.
Yeah, and I think Ronan Day-Lewis put together a really strong crew for this movie. I mean, it's produced by Dede Gardner and Jeremy Kleiner of Plan B. Chris Oddie is the production designer. He did The Zone of Interest and Under the Skin, so a Jonathan Glazer collaborator. We also, our score was composed by The Haxan Cloak. That's the stage name of our composer here, and he did Midsommar. So there's this feeling that runs throughout it that it's very observational, but also engaging, and they're telling a story that feels like it's been around for a really long time, which I thought was really cool. I think some of the writing, especially in the scenes with Samantha Morton, she's back at home, really away from Sean Bean and Daniel Day-Lewis. That can feel a little bit overwritten, or for me, almost like it's there just for additional dramatic exposition. But overall, I think, I mean, I was really impressed with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to witness my meeting with Daniel.
Absolutely. We all met him. It was a lovely experience. I was there for moral support mostly. But no, he was really sweet and just really thankful, I think, for the love that he was receiving for this movie, and obviously being praised for everything that came before it, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do we want to jump to After the Hunt, our opening night film from Luca Guadagnino?
Yeah, let's do that. So this is another debut from writer Nora Garrett. Obviously, you know the name Luca Guadagnino. He directed the film. It stars Julia Roberts, Ayo Edebiri, Andrew Garfield, Michael Stuhlbarg, and Chloe Sevigny. Some of his favorite actors returning, which I love to see. I think my favorite performance of all of them was from Chloe, because she just kind of gets to do whatever she wants to do. She wears this amazing wig and comments on indie rock songs that seem somewhat familiar, that I know is your wheelhouse of music.
Mm-hmm.
But the narrative circles around this professor, Alma, played by Julia Roberts, and her husband, Michael Stuhlbarg, playing Frederick. I liken them to Ina and Jeffrey, and you kind of see that throughout the movie with their cooking abilities and just their rapport. It's more of like an aura, and Frederick is very much there, but he's on the side and has to kind of force himself into the situation, or to keep himself present while Alma is with her students. She teaches at Yale, and one of her colleagues, Hank, this is played by Andrew Garfield, in the opening scene, we see all of them conversing at this dinner party, and Hank and Alma are very handsy, touchy, and we see something going on with Maggie, played by Ayo. And what ends up happening after the night, Maggie leaves with Hank. And then after a couple days, Maggie comes to Alma and says that she's been attacked by Hank. And the rest of the film dives into the scandal of SA on the campus between them throughout the various perspectives that we have of these characters. And I think it has trouble a bit of finding what it wants to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think it leaves multiple things pretty open-ended. And again, I think that's for having a conversation on the matter and this being an open topic. But I think I wanted more, knowing Luca Guadagnino and what he's done before, and with this cast, this stellar cast, and we know all of them, I would say, really well. I mean, Julia Roberts is a movie star, and I think, despite how I felt about the movie, you know, you're enraptured by her line readings, her mannerisms, and how she interacts with all these characters. I feel like you get to know some of them very well, and some of them you have trouble with. So I think this was an odd choice, I think, for opening night, but it did premiere at Venice. I kind of felt similarly to what we had heard out of that festival with the movie, but, you know, on its release wide, I think there will be some more success with it than I think we saw at our premiere. How did you feel about this one?
Yeah, I think I went into this wanting to really love it because, one, I think that the reactions out of Venice, I wasn't sure if they were just being a little bit harsh in their early response to it. But also, I do really like the films of Luca Guadagnino, and also the subject matter was so interesting to me. I love movies set really within academia. And I was excited to just see Julia Roberts in a role like this. But as the film started to unfold, it reminded me of how much I love Todd Field and how not everyone can make Tar. No matter how hard they try, no matter what they're going for, that film is really special. And I think that this movie tries to be Tar in so many ways. I think it sometimes also tries to have this feeling of Closer, the Mike Nichols film, or even of Doubt. It takes itself very seriously also. And I think the best Luca Guadagnino films are a little bit trashy. So I almost wish that it leaned into that a little bit more. I also don't necessarily think that this script was sharp enough or really prepared to address the topics of race and gender within higher education. It kind of just touches on them lightly and then moves on. And you talking about it being open-ended, I think it's a problem when a film isn't interested in answering questions, but not a problem when it's ambiguous, because I love ambiguity in films like this. I love that about Tar, for instance. But here, it just feels like they just didn't know what they wanted to say with the film. But I did really love Julia Roberts here. I think this is a great performance, and I can't say that I didn't enjoy watching this. I did, because of her. I really liked seeing her and Michael Stuhlbarg. I liked the choices that she made with this character. And it is already really quotable, I think, because of Roberts' line readings. And I'm just going to say there's a choice made really early in this film that made me roll my eyes so hard. And I still just do not understand why they made such heavy-handed allusions to another filmmaker's films. That is what I will say. I'm not going to spoil it or give away what it is, but you will know from the titles instantly when you see this movie. But it felt like very, I don't know, kind of like cheap, low-hanging fruit to do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree with you. Kind of an odd choice for opening night, but did you hear from others who saw the film if they liked it or what the general response was? Our audience overall seemed to be more into it than I expected. And maybe that's just the opening night buzz and feel of being at the first night of the festival.
I think overall I heard similar things from most people. I did have a friend say that he liked it, and I said, oh dear. But I think, you know, how the movie opens, apart from what you're saying, the score, the sound is just confusing, mm-hmm. I would say, and on the nose. So I think overall it's like a mixed negative. But again, I think general audiences might find this a bit more easy to watch, maybe because of the actors or Luca maybe trying to appeal to a more general audience than have to say something that makes it more divisive. I'm not sure, but I think the next movie will also be divisive. This is from Netflix and Kathryn Bigelow's latest film, A House of Dynamite. This premiered at Venice and was written by Noah Oppenheim. What did you think of this movie? Because we saw this at different screenings.
I hate to say this because I was really looking forward to this, but I did not care for this one at all. I do not think that the Rashomon-style structure works. I think it actually totally cuts this film off at the knees and abandons a lot of tension that Bigelow could have created after about 25 minutes into the film. So this movie, for listeners, is about a nuclear missile that is headed towards the United States. So you can imagine it's very tense. It's very high pressure. You can really feel all of that throughout. And I was enjoying this for the first section of the movie. But what it does is it basically counts down from about 19 minutes from when they realize that the missile is headed towards the U.S. They focus on different groups who are affected by this. So they look into different sections of the White House. So you spend time with the president, you spend some time at the Pentagon. And I think in the first section, when we're following Rebecca Ferguson's character, she plays a woman named Olivia, who is really in charge of making decisions within the White House around security. When we're following her in the initial stages, I was really into this. I was, you know, really, I think, eager to see what happened. But when we count down to the missile detonating, we get a hard cut to black, and then it essentially the time starts over and we're focused on another command center. So we just have to start our nerves over again to get to the same place, to get to see some of the same characters say the same things that they've already said before, just from a different angle. And then when that section ends, cut to black. Okay, now we're going to start this again. I just felt nothing from that. I think it totally fizzles out, and I think the ending says nothing. This movie, to me, felt like Aaron Sorkin working on an episode of Dateline. I wanted to really like this. I really did, but it just completely fizzled out for me after that first section. And the score from Volker Bertelmann, I think, would actually work here, but it is the Conclave score recycled. It almost sounds exactly the same.
Yeah. I mean, your comment about Dateline, Oppenheim is the president of NBC News, so this is a very distinct perspective into the lives of different government employees, and she's really getting at what would happen. What is the line of command when things like this happen? And I think how things escalate in the beginning, I was locked in, and she is really good at that. There were a few problems I had. I think it was just the amount of characters that we were following. Like, of course, I love Tracy Letts and Rebecca Ferguson is great. But because we're jumping between different locations, we have to abandon most of them in each subsequent section. So I think when you start to like somebody, you completely switch to a different character and you have to start that process over again. And that's exactly what you're saying. I think by that final time, we rewind to a different location to follow now the president, played by Idris Elba. Again, he's great. I was overwhelmed, and not in a good way. I was like, okay, I get it. I think from the first two, especially the first one, when it does cut to black, you're on the edge of your seat and yeah, it just fizzles. So I think the movie, it sets itself up as being one thing, and then it completely switches or transforms itself into being something else. And I think that was hard to reckon with. I totally understand where Bigelow is coming from. And again, it's the process of this happening and how the United States and maybe other countries, but how unprepared we are for a situation like this. And something she was trying to do with the amount of characters is show the humanity behind the people running this. It's government employees, yes, but they have families and they have hearts and they have emotions. And even though there are potentially 18 minutes left in the world before they could die, they want to contact their families. So it was just trying to do too much of, you know, do we save the world or do we get our cell phones and contact our partners and families? So it felt so jumbled that by the end, I didn't feel as much as I wanted to. So I think we're on a similar page. I liked the score more than Conclave. I would probably say I like this movie more than Conclave also, but I understand that it's a very similar score.
So I think that maybe let's go now to the next film. That's another Netflix release. So A House of Dynamite will be coming out on Netflix later this year. So will our next film, which is J. Kelly. This premiered at Venice. I caught this at Telluride, but now it makes the jump to New York Film Festival. I just saw that this is Noah Baumbach's 10th film to screen at the festival. So he is clearly, you know, a New York staple. This stars George Clooney as the titular J. Kelly. He is this aging movie star. Adam Sandler plays his manager, Ron. I've given some of my thoughts on this before, so I'd like to hand it over to you because I actually don't know what you thought of it because you didn't log a star rating on Letterboxd. So I'm curious what you think.
I'm starting to take notes from you and Bo and Yang of not rating everything, but also I think I have some festival fatigue already and realizing that my reviews are heightened definitely by my experiences. But I will say I was very delighted by this movie. I enjoyed it and the actors, the writing. You know, Noah Baumbach is co-writing this with Emily Mortimer, which really took me by surprise when I saw that in the final credits. And she sadly wasn't there to talk about it, but during the Q&A, everybody was praising the writing, which really cued me into like some Oscar possibility there for original screenplay for her and Noah Baumbach. But this being, yes, his 10th picture there in 30 years, especially with people returning that were in his first movie, I think was just a really cool experience, given the film being about this ode to a really big movie star. And his name might be J. Kelly, but it's also George Clooney. So I think by the end, you really start to see these meta aspects of what Noah and Emily created about being a star, what that means for you personally. And I love some of the lines in the film about when you're a star, you're acting as two people. You're acting as yourself and that star. So it does give you some insight into Hollywood and how these actors, these big actors, like you said, we also have Adam Sandler, we have Laura Dern, Billy Crudup, Riley Keough, Patrick Wilson. It's a great cast. It wasn't a story that I was expecting. I think when you think of, oh, it's an ode to Hollywood, it's going to be a certain thing. But it ends up being about J. Kelly, who has this daughter who's graduating, and she is going on a trip to Europe with some friends. And he wants to spend more time with her. Because as the movie goes on, we see him having conversations with his other daughter and past experiences with his Hollywood father, his mentor, played by Jim Broadbent, who I think is also great, and how those relationships have affected him over time and not only made him the person he is, but made him the person he isn't and the lives that he's affected because of that. So I think it's a really wonderful script. I think this is a crowd pleaser. It could very much win some AARP awards.
Our favorite ceremony.
Exactly. And actually be a great Netflix movie for people at home.
I think it will play really well at home too. I was also positive on it from Telluride. I think I also just really like the crafts in the movie. So Lena Sandgren, our DP here, I think creates this really dreamy, beautiful world for our characters. And I love the way that the film opens on the set. And it's a recreation of New York, even though this is largely an LA and Italy centered movie. Noah had to get New York in it. And I like how that's incorporated. And also Nicholas Britell's score. I was a big fan of that. Like you said, I think audiences will really enjoy this. I don't think the father-daughter stuff works that well in the movie. I wasn't as interested in that, I think, especially compared to some other films this season that address father-daughter issues and dynamics, like Sentimental Value or One Battle After Another. But I did like what it had to say about personal and professional relationships and how in an industry like the film industry, those can really bleed together and what can happen when you're really caring about yourself. In the case of J. Kelly or in the case of Ron, you've been working for someone else for so long that you've realized what you've had to sacrifice in your own personal life. So I really liked Sandler in this too, and the Ron character. I thought that was really well developed by Baumbach and Mortimer. And yeah, I think that this will play really well with audiences here at the festival.
And next up, we have Pillion. This premiered at Cannes in the Uncertain Regard category, and it won screenplay. So this was directed and written by Harry Lytton and stars Alexander Skarsgård and Harry Melling. This was surprising to me, I think, for it being in New York and how well it's done, because I don't think this BDSM romance story is something we usually see on the big screen, especially from A24 being distributed at film festivals. And I don't say that in a mean way, because it does play very well with audiences. It did with mine. It's quite funny. And I think it's one from the festival that I continue to think about. You know, this relationship that forms between Ray and Colin Skarsgård and Melling. For people more unfamiliar with Harry Melling, I just couldn't not see him as Dudley, even in this movie. It really just took me aback when I saw it. Mm-hmm. Because of how vivid it is, but I think it is very sweet. You know, you described it as this before, and I was like, this being sweet, but I think by the end, I understood where you were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some things about it that made me laugh, but I think overall, it's fun. It is not for everybody. It has a specific audience, I would say. But if A24 does release this wide, or if people are able to see it and have seen the trailer and are into it, I would say go for it. You liked this though, right?
I did like it. I thought it was a nice surprise because I don't think I realized that it was more of a romantic comedy at parts. And that was unexpected. I think when you hear, oh, you're seeing a BDSM movie with Alexander Skarsgård, you have a particular... I don't know, idea in mind. So this is not what I was expecting. By the end of it, I really enjoyed it. I also think Harry Melling is really good. This will be released by A24. So it has a date in the UK of November 28th. But I don't think we have a date yet for US release. But it should be coming, I think, in the fall or winter time.
And then another release we have coming at the festival, which we've already had at Venice and in Toronto, where it won the People's Choice International Award, is Park Chan-wook's No Other Choice. This stars Lee Byung-hun, who won a tribute at Toronto, and also stars Son Yi-jin. So what did you think of this one?
So I really like Park Chan-wook's films. I really enjoyed Decision to Leave a few years ago. The Handmaiden, I would say, is still my favorite film of his. I wanted to love this far more than I did. And I know that most people do really love this, so I'm going to approach this gently. But I don't know. There was something here about the tone and the writing that just felt all over the place and not as focused and precise as I would have liked for a social satire. You know, it is this black comedy. It's a satire about the job market, about what you'll do to be rehired or employable again and kicking out your competition. And I enjoyed that. But I think I just wanted a little bit more focus. I think it gets a little bit unwieldy at times. And I think it's really natural to compare this to Parasite just because of the topics that they're addressing and the intense stratification of wealth really in South Korea. It is also a thriller in the same way, and I just didn't find myself being shocked or surprised really by much of it, and I think that's what I really wanted from this, but I think it is really well made. I think there are some amazing directorial choices. I personally loved Son Yi-jin's performance. She plays the wife and mother in the film, and I thought she was great. She was hilarious. She was the character I was actually, you know, really, really interested in throughout the movie. But overall, I think it's a beautiful, exciting piece of art. I think I just wish that it maybe went in different directions or played with those directions and the sense of humor in different ways throughout it. Maybe it made certain choices earlier rather than later. And I think by the time we get to the ending, I felt a little bit let down by it. My favorite part of the whole movie, though, and I think this is a great, clever detail by Park and a great wink, is that our main character, he is obsessed with plants and trees. He has a greenhouse, and there's so many beautiful images in the movie of nature, and specifically, I think, his love of trees and plants. And in his career, he's dedicated to destroying them because he works for a paper company. And that dissonance, I think, is such a great idea. And I wish it was just explored a little bit more in the film. But I do think it's really strong, and I understand why people love it. Those were, I think, just kind of my reservations I had with it coming out of it.
I feel the same way about Park Chan-wook's films. I love how audacious they are and daring, but I think this was really safe for him. And I just wanted to see more. I think his ideas on the themes that a lot of people are experiencing currently and the takeover of AI and electronics and robots, of human jobs and characteristics. I mean, we currently in the headlines are talking about an AI actress being cast in movies. And that is what this movie is talking about. But it's a little too straightforward for things that I wouldn't have expected for Park. I love The Handmaiden. I love Old Boy. And those just continue to shock you throughout the movie. I think this is, again, maybe more of a general crowd pleaser. And I am lower on it, I think, the further I get from it. But I will say, you know, as always, his camera work is pristine. That is the most daring part about this movie. It just continues to surprise you, and the point of view that we have or how it moves, especially his transitions between scenes or shots. And for me, what was disappointing, you mentioned Parasite. I thought of Parasite throughout the movie, and that this was just a lesser version of that. You know, Parasite continued to challenge our thoughts during the film, and this is just more straightforward. That being said, I would still seek it out at the theater when this is released. This is doing well with audiences, and I'm sure will stick around throughout the award season. I don't know about it being a shoe-in for winner in international feature, or like getting Park Chan-wook into director or acting categories, but I think we'll still be talking about it in some capacity. And I wouldn't hate to see a cinematography nod. I mean, I really wanted that with The Handmaiden. But again, anytime we can get a Park Chan-wook film in there, I would be happy.
Okay, so if you could give any of these movies one Oscar, what would it be?
I think it would be writing for Jay Kelly. I don't know. There's some other good honorable mentions there. But I think for how contemplative that screenplay is, and is one that resonates with the most people, I would say. I think, you know, I was emotional by the end of this movie. And even though I'm not maybe the core demographic of who it's getting after, this may be for an older audience who can look back on their entire life and say, you know, what did I do wrong? Or did I take any missteps? Am I the happiest version of myself? I think we can be that at any age. You know, we can look back and be nostalgic or melancholic about decisions. So I think I was just happiest to see a different side to Noah Baumbach with a really enjoyable movie. So I would give it to, yeah, Noah and Emily for writing. What would your Oscar be?
In what will be a surprise to no one, I am giving Daniel Day-Lewis his 4th Best Actor Oscar. I think that what he does in Anemone is pretty remarkable, as always, but he is delivering quite a few monologues in this movie where you realize there is no one who is as magnetic as him. Mm-hmm. You are just completely enraptured, hanging on every word, and you feel for him. He is our greatest actor, so I will not pass up an opportunity to give him my Oscar.
No surprise, but Daniel Day-Lewis and Katharine Hepburn would be a great combination.
I agree. You know, some are saying Daniel Day-Lewis is our modern-day Katharine Hepburn.
Some being you.
Some okay. being me right now. So that was our first New York Film Festival recap. We'll be back again next week with additional titles to review, talking a little bit more about some of our festival experience. But I think this was a great way to kick off our time at the festival.
I agree. I can't wait for all the other movies we have to see. Thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us at Oscar Wilde Pod on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Blue Sky. You can find bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde and updated nomination predictions throughout award season at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.